Call into session this morning's meeting of the House General Government Committee. Welcome all. We have three public hearings today, and I am happy for all of us to get started on bills. So I officially open a public hearing on House Bill 2092, and we'll ask our committee administrators to put us in the picture.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2092 exempts from the insurance code annuity issuing activities by charitable entities that meet minimum financial and organizational requirements. Those requirements include net assets of $300,000 or more, and having been in continuous operation for at least 3 years or affiliated with an organization, a charitable organization that has been in existence for at least 3 years. This also requires charitable organizations that meet those requirements to disclose in writing to donors that gift annuities are not issued by an insurance company, are not subject to regulation by the state of Oregon, and are not protected by an insurance guarantee association.
Thank you. We have a couple of folks to talk to us about this, and I'd like to call Pat Allen up to start us off.
Thank you, Chair Berger, members of the committee. Patrick Allen, manager of the Office of Regulatory Streamlining. Just briefly to kick this off, all three of the bills you're going to hear today are the first three bills your committee has that are from the 35-bill regulatory streamlining package. I'm going to speak to the second two bills, but just a reminder from the overview. A lot of these bills in and of themselves aren't great or shaking changes in policy, but by virtue of lots of these kinds of small improvements, we think we can make substantive improvements in the state's business climate. And so just wanted to provide you that brief overview before Joel Aria comes up to talk specifically about the insurance bill. Thank you.
Thank you. And Joel Aria, if you'd come forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Joel Aria. I'm the Insurance Administrator with the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and I'm here today to speak in support of House Bill 2092. This bill furthers the Governor's program of regulatory streamlining, as Pat mentioned, by eliminating a type of regulation that we don't think is any longer necessary. What the regulation affects is charitable institutions, educational and other sorts of charitable institutions that provide charitable annuities for people. A charitable annuity is a pretty simple transaction. Somebody gives, say, a couple hundred thousand dollars to an educational institution. In exchange, they get a certain amount of payment and annuity for their lifetime, and then the remainder goes to the charitable institution. That's kind of a situation we're dealing with here. Two reasons why we bring this bill forward to eliminate our current regulation. First, when we took a careful look at this kind of regulation, and what kind of complaints we were getting, we saw actually we were getting no complaints from consumers. We hadn't had a complaint in 5 years on charitable annuities, and we looked for any other indicia of problems here in Oregon and found none. So that was step number one. Then we did a program review, because that's in terms of the streamlining. Pat kind of cracks the whip on us and tells us to, you know, look at our regulatory programs and try to streamline them where we can. So we did a program review in this area. And saw that, in fact, most other states have moved away from regulating charitable annuities, presumably because they saw the same thing we do. There are currently only 9 states that regulate charitable annuities the way that Oregon does. Over half the states do what we're proposing to do in this bill, which is not entirely eliminate consumer protections, but have a kind of conditional exemption, and I'll describe the details of that in a minute. And then the rest of the states either have a blanket exemption or just simply don't address the issue at all, which is essentially equal to a blanket exemption. So we're right in the mainstream with other states, and we're dealing with an area with no consumer complaints. That's where we started. What then do we propose to do? The conditional exemption in this bill would allow charitable institutions to continue to issue charitable annuities without the kind of regulatory oversight we currently have if they met four basic conditions. One, they need to be qualified to receive charitable contributions under the Internal Revenue Code. We want to make sure they're legitimate charities. Two, they have a minimum of $300,000 in net assets. So there is some financial wherewithal within the charity in order to be able to do charitable annuities. That compares, say, to the typical requirement under the insurance code would be $2.5 million in fixed capital to start an insurance company. They have to have been in continuous operation for 3 years, so some kind of track record. And finally, they need to maintain a separate and distinct trust fund as a reserve fund adequate to meet future payments under the annuity agreement. So they need to do what insurers would traditionally do, which is reserve against annuities. And if they meet those four conditions, they're exempt from the code. Last point I'd make about the bill is that there continues to be some regulation of charities. Here in Oregon, we have behind me Ross Laverne from the Attorney General's office, who says his niche in the world is to regulate charities. And so these kinds of charities would still, most of them anyway, would have to still register with the Attorney General's office and be certified in that manner as well. With that, I'd urge your support for House Bill 2092 and be happy to answer any questions.
Well, I have a specific question, and then I'll entertain. And you may not be the one to answer this, but I did know that you require this reserve, and yet then the question is, is that something that would be noted in the financial statements of the charity? How do you regulate whether they actually do that on an ongoing basis? Do you understand the question?
Madam Chair, yes, I do understand the question. And from the insurance perspective, there would be the requirement, but there wouldn't be any active oversight of it. One of the other issues that we found when we looked into this area was that our current oversight, unless we go out and actually look at those funds in the way that we do with traditional insurance companies, require periodic statements and actually go out and examine them in the field, we aren't sure whether they're exactly being complied with. But were we to move to the full compliance program here like we do with insurance companies to make sure that they have the money to honor their promises, the costs of that get pretty steep. And we would then hear from the charities themselves would be in here saying that they can no longer afford to do charitable annuities because the cost of compliance with regulatory requirements is too great. So we are here basically in a system of trust with companies, and if there turn out to be problems after we, assuming the legislature were to deregulate this area, if there turned out to be problems, I would suspect we'd be back here saying that we need to ramp up the regulation. But at this point, we haven't had those problems, and we don't anticipate having them. We also looked around the rest of the country. We're super cautious in insurance, so we looked around the rest of the country and said, what kind of consumer complaints are there in other states? We found a couple cases in Arizona, the entire country, just a couple cases in Arizona where some charitable annuity transactions got in trouble. But even there was debate about whether the level of regulatory oversight would have actually found the problem or not.
So basically, this then would be part of the fiduciary responsibility of the board of whatever the charity is to make sure that this is handled in their financials appropriately, and the state then backs out and says, that's your job, we're out of the loop.
Madam Chair, that's correct. I mean, it's a little bit hard for us in insurance. I kind of chafe at it a bit because we usually do go out and verify. But in fact, if you look at laws in general in Oregon, as in any legal system, most of the laws are there. They tell people how to behave, and there isn't anybody day-to-day checking up on people. If there are going to be problems under that law, that's going to change the situation. But most of the time, we tell people how we want them to behave, and we depend on most people to behave properly without a lot of day-to-day oversight.
Thank you. Questions from the committee?
Are they going to...
Yeah. There are proposed amendments to the original bill.
Oh, I'm sorry. I Madam Chair, I should have mentioned those. The amendment deals with the relatively technical part of the bill, which is that there are, I think, four charities that we've identified who would not meet the four new criteria. In particular, they wouldn't meet the minimum $300,000 in net assets at this point. All of them are associated with larger enterprises. One of them is associated with the Catholic Church, for instance. And so we thought all four of them probably would be able, if they wanted to meet the new requirements, but it might take more than 6 months. And so insofar as the bill as written goes into effect as of January 1st of next year, as you know, the default position for new legislation, we gave the charities that don't meet these requirements an extra year to meet the requirements. So they would, the ones that wouldn't meet these requirements would stay under our current regulatory regime. They still would have to file audits with us and so forth for one more year, and then it would be fish or cut bait. They either meet the new requirements or they wouldn't be allowed to sell any more charitable annuities in Oregon. So that the amendment is about those grandfathered companies, and it provides that regulatory oversight for the additional year. Thank you for catching it. I apologize for not mentioning that.
Just a minute here. On page 2 of the printed bill, line 94.
And track it down.
Period, insert. Okay. And this is a series of statutes with that we're inserting with regard to charitable annuities or charitable organizations and statutory. I mean, the insert that we're doing here. Anybody can come forward and answer this.
Yes, I believe so.
We'll double check.
Madam Chair.
We'll have our committee check that. Yes.
Just for clarification, on line 9, page 2, would that read gift annuities until January 1st, 2007, subject to ORS 731.704, 731.708, 731.712, 731.716, 731.720.
You don't need to read it all. We get the idea. Yes.
The way that will read.
Yes.
So we're inserting that because that's also down in, of course, 19.
Of course.
So,
okay.
Madam Chair, Representative Escobar, I didn't have the amendment in front of me, but that the provisions that are in Section 4 are repealed by this act as effectively as of January 1st of next year. So the intent of that amendment is to reinstate those provisions as they pertain to the grandfathered organizations for 1 year.
Okay.
That was the problem in the bill was there wasn't, even though they were grandfathered in the original bill, there wasn't going to be any regulatory structure for them to comply with for that year of grandfathering, because they've been repealed. So this reinstates it just for those grandfathered organizations.
Okay. Does that make sense?
Yes. Thank you.
Further questions? Yes.
Joel, just out of curiosity, the one consumer complaint that was issued, what was it concerning? Was it just simply a fraud case, or what was the problem?
Mr. Chair, Representative Buckley, you're talking about the Arizona case now?
The one in Oregon 5 years ago.
Well, we only have our records clear back 5 years,
okay.
So there haven't been any. We don't know of any even prior to that. And the Arizona ones I could get you details on, I don't know them
just
today.
Just out of curiosity.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Further questions? Further information requests on this one? Thank you
very much,
sir, for coming down. Okay, we're going to move on. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2094 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2092.
Backwards.
I've already got the file in front of me. Close the one on 2092 and open on 2094. Sorry, I moved my files before I. And Patrick Allen's going to come back and talk about this one. Thank you.
Well, I'm confused.
You want me to talk about this one?
Yes, Kara's going to open up.
I have to earn my keep today. 2094 allows state agencies to offer extended term licenses with terms of 2, 3, 4, and 5 years in length. And it allows for the license applicant to either choose, if an agency provides an extended term license, to choose from either the extended term, length of term, or the term outlined in statute. And I know Pat will speak more fully to other issues on this. And I should throw in, too, that there are some other changes in the bill that are not connected with extended term license, but they can provide for continuity and language in Oregon revised statutes, and they clean up some old language and some errors in grammar. Oops, wrong bill.
That's 2095.
2095. Yeah. Pay no attention to this woman. She put her note on the wrong page.
Okay, here we go.
Now I'm doing it.
Pat Allen, please put
again,
us in the picture.
Patrick Allen for the Office of Regulatory Streamlining. Last week in the overview presentation, we talked about the statewide license and permit directory, providing us the ability to search licenses and learn some information about what kinds of licenses we had. We found in that search several hundred bills with terms of typically 1 year, short-term licenses. And we asked the basic question of why are these 1 year licenses and do they need to be? And often it is good public policy for it to be 1 year license. I think I showed the example of amusement park rides. There's an important public protective benefit of having an annual inspection. A lot of these are food safety licenses. Again, having a periodic inspection to make sure that equipment is clean and those kinds of things is a benefit. But there are licenses where it appears, at least on the surface, that there's a valid question of could this be a longer term license without jeopardizing public protection and thereby reduce the amount of paperwork that the licensee and the agency needs to deal with. And again, last week I think I set the example of the annual licensing of electrical contracting businesses, where there doesn't seem to be much risk of public harm if it were a 2 year, 3 year, 4 year license, some kind of a longer term. House Bill 2094 itself is really quite simple and straightforward. An agency that issues licenses of 1 or 2 years duration is authorized under the bill to offer extended terms of 2 to 5 years in duration. The extended term is intended to be an optional offering, so the bill does not authorize agencies to unilaterally require all licensees to use the longer term, and that really was in deference to very small businesses where cash flow actually could be considered an issue. Finally, agencies are authorized to increase license fees commensurate to the extended term of the license. So, in other words, if we're doubling the length of the license, the agency would double the fee, and there would be basically a no net revenue change over the period of the license. Finally, I would just note that the bill by itself does not automatically extend any individual license or permit. Rather, approval of the bill will allow agencies to take case-by-case administrative action to offer extended terms. If the bill is enacted, then the Office of Regulatory Streamlining will work with agencies to identify good candidate licenses for that kind of action, and we'd promote the authority as a streamlining tool. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Questions from the committee?
Madam Chair, approximately how many different types of licenses are you talking about through how many different agencies?
Chair Berger, Representative Sumner, I can't give you an exact count. I can tell you that the licenses outside the Department of Consumer and Business Services totals about 334 individual licenses that range from food safety to professional licensing. Some examples that I'd cite that might be candidates for this kind of extension: career school licenses, which are from the Department of Education, cosmetology facilities from the Health Licensing Office, escrow agents from the real estate agency, membership camping contract salespersons, again from the real estate agency, wrecker certificates and vehicle transporter certificates at ODOT. It's literally soup to nuts in terms of what's out
there.
Thank
you. So this, if I may, this bill will allow each agency case by case to determine which licenses may be extended.
That's exactly correct.
And the reason for it is...
I'm sorry, the reason for the authority?
The reason to extend these licenses?
Yeah, Chair Berger, Representative Sumner, the idea would be to cut down on the paperwork that businesses who are required to be licensed file. If there's, you say there's 2 or 3 pages of information they need to submit, if they need to do that once every 4 or 5 years or 3 years instead of annually, that cuts down paperwork for the business, also cuts down paperwork and processing for the agency as well.
Understood. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
If I may... Explain to me what they do if it's statutory. They can't get around. I mean, does this actually take all that statutory language away en masse for all of these licenses and replace it with this?
Chair Berger, that's a good question. The plain language of the bill is that notwithstanding any other provision of law, agencies, regulators, in some cases it's boards or commissions, have the authority to make a case-by-case offering of an extended license. The statute remains and becomes and continues to be the default licensing period, but this allows the regulatory decision-maker to go through a process of looking and determining if it's in the public interest to be able to offer an extended term, and then that supersedes the statutory length of the license. This helps get us around the issue of 334 different bills to come in, or one bill with Lord knows how many thousands of pages to actually item by item make changes.
And I want to be very sure that the language in here, and I'll go back and read it, says that they can't willy-nilly do that. They have to go through a process before they... Do you understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little concerned that it's a little loose and speak to that, if you would.
Yeah, Chair Berger, I'm just scanning through the language quickly myself. The language probably is not as tight as you may be looking for. I would look at the first paragraph of Section 2 of the bill, which says, notwithstanding any other provision of law, an agency that issues licenses may offer those licenses with terms of 3, 4, or 5 years. The bill itself doesn't specify a particular administrative process to do that. My expectation is that's what agencies would do, but if you're looking for tighter language, we would probably need to amend the bill.
I think there might be. Questions?
I would.
Questions of the committee? Further question? Did you have a question, Representative Esquivel?
No.
Yeah. And just to clarify, Pat, again, what you're talking about, the licenses that do go for amusement parks, food prep, et cetera, Where do we see in this that they will be kept to a one-year license, or does this give the ability for an agency head to say, oh, I decide I'm going to give amusement parks a free ride this year?
Pun intended.
Madam Chair, Representative Buckley, I think you are right. The plain language of this bill could see that circumstance happening, and so I think as we look at an amendment, we probably do need to tighten up the underlying reasoning and process that need the findings that would need to be made to do that.
With sensitivity, members of the committee, to the fact that we're trying to deregulate, I think that we also have a responsibility to be pretty clear that there be some process here, not willy-nilly at agency. So, Pat, we will work towards an amendment. Yeah, Representative Esquivel.
Maybe we could table this for a week and have him come back with an amendment.
We will absolutely do that.
Have specificity on what he's talking about for the year basis.
Yeah, it is not my intention to go to any kind of vote on this today. It'll give plenty of room for these kinds of questions on all of these bills and discussion of any proposed amendments. So most assuredly, we'll come back until the committee is satisfied.
Chair Berger, my intent, and see if this matches what you're thinking, would be to come back with an amendment that would provide for some sort of required findings about the public protection being provided and some kind of a required administrative process or a statement that there be an administrative process, something along those lines. Does that make sense?
That is what I'm looking at. Does the committee have some other sense that... I mean,
can I?
Yes,
Gerber,
by all means.
So perhaps some kind of criteria that the agency would would use prior to granting a license or extending. Is that the idea?
My own sense of that, Representative Galizio, is that if we're trying to deregulate something, let's not get too regulatory about it. So I would look to saying there has to be a process, and it has to be public, and there has to be some transparency to it that gives folks an opportunity, rather than us specifying what that process is and what the criteria is. Pat, am I on? Am I thinking like a streamliner here, or am I?
Kipper, always.
You see what I'm saying? Because if our goal here is to deregulate in a way, let's be careful we don't regulate the deregulation beyond. So rather than us specifying, I think that what we can do is a findings, a process that has to be, specify that they have to go through a process. And it has to be transparent. And specify in that way rather than saying the process has to include these elements. You see what I'm getting at?
Chair Berger, I think simply stating that they can do this by rule would accomplish that. It would then throw it into the category of you have to actually go through an administrative rule process, and we could work on some language about needing to be able to find that it's in the public interest as expressed in the underlying. Okay. I think it's a pretty straightforward amendment.
Yeah, the rulemaking process will drive some of this.
Chair Berger, can I ask a different question? This will show that I'm not an attorney. Right. What effect, if any, might this bill have on the ability to suspend or, obviate a license? In other words, when you talk about, you issue a license, let's say it's for 2 years, and then you find some wrongdoing.
Sure. Chair Berger, Representative Glazio, I'm fond of saying I've never been to law school. I work near one, so similar to you, I'm not an attorney. But my lay supposition would be that to the extent that an agency has an ability within its existing license term to suspend or revoke the license, that wouldn't change by virtue of having extended the license term. If someone did something that ordinarily results in license forfeiture or suspension, my supposition would be that that authority would remain.
Further questions? Okay. That will come back. So I'm going to close this public hearing on House Bill 2094 and open one on House Bill 2095 and invite our committee administrator to tell us a little bit about it.
And let's see if she can get the right bill this time. This is my first day, too, at this. House Bill 2095 eliminates the requirement for applicants to have documents notarized in cases where proof of identity is not needed. And also eliminates the need for a sworn statement in order to, and that would facilitate electronic commerce. It retains the penalties for providing false information that's now in statute. And if I may add, there are some other changes in this bill. But I've been assured by legislative counsel that they are to provide continuity in language in the statutes. It cleans up some old language and actually a spelling error. So if you want to speak to those, I'd be happy to respond to those in more detail. But I just wanted to let you know that there is some other information there besides the issue of sworn statements.
A word to the committee. This often happens that legislative counsel in drafting a bill will find things within the statute that are sort of aha moments. Oh my goodness, how could we have done that? And so with a heads up to the committee that hears it, they will try and clean up the language while we're there rather than and wait till you see the omnibus cleanup bill that always comes through in the middle of the session. Oh, my goodness. So that's the second part that Kara was speaking to, and we do need to ask questions if we have them. And if they're real specific, I will encourage you to get legislative counsel to answer them, because Pat Allen is not here to speak to that. He's here to speak to the main idea of this particular bill. So, Pat.
Again, for the record, Patrick Allen, manager of the Office of Regulatory Streamlining. Again, we touched on this bill in the overview session last week. There are a number of different kinds of licenses where the applications or periodic reports are required in current statute to be submitted under oath. And in investigating many of those circumstances, found that the need for a document to be under oath didn't seem to be particularly compelling, particularly given that it then forms a barrier to any kind of electronic application and reporting, which a number of agencies are considering. This bill specifically repeals that requirement for licenses and reporting dealing with X-ray equipment, credit service organizations, money transmitters, consumer finance organizations, pawnbrokers, tax consultants and preparers, occupational therapists, physical therapists, respiratory therapists, dietitians, and investigators. And that's a list worked out through discussions with the specific agencies involved to assure that that they or their governing boards were supportive of the concept. The agencies would continue to be authorized to require submission of information in the form and manner their decision-making bodies require. Regulators would also continue to be able to revoke the license of an individual or organization which is found to have submitted false information. And finally, it's my understanding that an individual submitting false information would continue to be subject to a potential charge of unsworn falsification, which is a Class B misdemeanor. What would be lost by passage of this bill is the ability to charge an individual submitting false information with the felony charge of perjury. My understanding that is that in practice, such felony charges are extraordinarily rare, like I can't find any rare. Passage of House Bill 2095, on the other hand, will remove an absolute barrier to the submission of any of this information by electronic means. As you know, increasing use of electronic filing and reporting is an important tool in making business regulations more customer-friendly and in reducing paperwork. While the bill itself will not cause the implementation of electronic licensing and reporting, it's a necessary step for any future action by these listed agencies.
Thank you. Questions? Mr. Representative?
Yeah, on page 4, section 10, Pat, why do we regulate dietitians? What, can you give me any information on scandals featuring dietitians in the state of Oregon recklessly informing us to eat 9 helpings of vegetables at breakfast? Or?
Chair Representative Buckley, I could not inform you of scandals regarding dietitians. My understanding of the licensing of dietitians is at least twofold. One, of course, is that dietitians are healthcare professionals and so interact with people's health. And secondly, In a number of professional licensing areas, there often is an intent to facilitate the ability of a healthcare professional to be able to bill Medicare. Medicare rules often provide that state licensing is a requirement, although in many cases, and I think specifically in the case of dietitians, Medicare rules also provide alternative means of being eligible for payment. I think any of the licenses or permits here, if they spark interest in why do we regulate that, probably the fair thing to do would be to arrange for some time with the board or entity that actually does the regulation and get into a discussion with them about that.
Can you tell me which proceeding to follow up?
Yes.
Can you tell me which board does cover dietitians?
Yes.
Board of Dietitians.
That is the Board of Examiners of Licensed Dietitians.
Very good.
There you go, Peter. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Further questions? Okay.
Thank you very much.
Can't change seats.
Okay. I would encourage you to ask me. Actually, I have on my list on my desk a pretty extensive list of some of the boards that oversee professional, basically professional standards within the state. It's an amazing list, and I think at some level an important function of government to sort of be the neutral party in disputes between and within professional, sort of in the licensing. What is a licensed dietitian? How do you tell one? And I think this applies in a lot of cases, but it is a legitimate question, is what's our role here? And in this case, I think our role is to be intelligent in how we do it and make the process work to protect the public and to be responsive in our role. So, with that, as a sort of a convoluted remark, and there are no further questions on this bill, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2095. And You have another question?
Nope.
I believe those were the only three on our to-do list for the day.
Yep.
Go home, read, have fun. We will work on amendments to the ones specifically. And if you have suggestions, please contact me and as to what you want on the on that. And we will probably see these back next week.
Yes.
Tuesday.
Oh, I see.
Okay.
I'm not sure about the amendment language. We'll have to work with
that. Yeah, that we may not. Okay. Anything else for the good of the order? Anything else anybody wants to talk about?
I just would like to say thanks to Pat. This is very very clear, very straightforwardly presented. Appreciate it very much.
We hope
Madam Chair, I'd like to bring up in general, if the cost savings to the state in issuing longer-term license is effective, why then should we not, as a state, pass some of that savings back to the professionals that we're regulating? For instance, a lower rate if they take license for 5 years instead of one. It would add to the ability of those businesses to make a profit, to stay in business in Oregon. Is it workable?
I would agree with you. Generally speaking, the idea of the fees on regulatory boards is not to make money for the state,
no,
but to cover the costs of the state's role in this. And I can assure you that these boards are very aware of this. So I think they are looking to just that being part of the of what we're doing here. Is if it lowers the burden on the state, then it's going to cost them less to license their business. I think that's exactly what we're working for. And I think Mr. Allen wants to speak to this, so we're going to let him.
That's not what the bill says.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just very briefly, keep in mind this bill will require agencies that offer extended terms to effectively maintain parallel systems. Businesses that choose to use the statutory term will be on the statutory term. Businesses that choose to use extended terms will be on extended terms. Representative Sumner, I think your point is a very good one. If, in fact, all you do is across the board extend a license term, my speculation would be that it's going to be pretty much a wash in this kind of a system where you've got multiple terms sitting out there. But it's a great argument if what we're talking about is how long should a license term in general be, and should we you know, blanketly extend them.
And when we bring this back for we'll open the hearing and discuss it further. So save that question. Okay? Yeah, I'd like to get this on the record at a later date. Anything else? Thank you. We're out of here.
My city.
We closed. We adjourned. I'm sorry.